From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made in March of 2013 when the City Council of Flint, Michigan, voted to stop buying water from Detroit. They planned to buy water from a new water authority that was estimated to save the city $19 million over 8 years. The only problem? The pipeline for this new water supplier had not been built yet. To continue supplying water to its residents, the city of Flint decided to pull water from the Flint River. On April 25, 2014, the city officially switched its water supply to the Flint River, and the problems started almost immediately. Complaints pouring in about the color and the smell of the water, but officials insisted it was safe. Yet concerns continued to build, and by September of 2015, city and state leaders could no longer deny there was a crisis. Doctors had discovered that blood lead levels in Flint children had more than doubled since the switch was made. The city's water supply was switched back to Detroit in October of 2015. But lead levels remain high, and no one knows when the city's water will be safe to drink again. All we know is that the numbers are grim. Thousands of children exposed to water with lead levels that more than double what the EPA would classify as hazardous waste. All of the questions raised by Flint have prompted many people across the country to ask about their own communities and lead in their communities. And as health officials and community activists know, we have had a long battle with lead here. Our problems stem not from water, but from old homes and lead paint. And despite decades of work, the proportion of children in Rochester found with elevated levels of lead in their blood in 2014 was roughly double that found in the children in Flint. This hour, we will explore the implications of the Flint crisis in Rochester. What are we learning? What do our panelists think about that? And where does our lead contamination come from? Who's responsible for it? And what can we all do to make sure we're safe from lead in our community? Let me welcome our guests for the hour. Dr. Stanley Schaefer's here, an associate professor in the University of Rochester Medical Center Department of Pediatrics and the Center for Community Health, and the director of the Western New York Lead Poisoning Resource Center Rochester office. Dr. Schaefer, nice to have you.
Thank you.
Also here is Elizabeth McDade, program director for the Coalition to Prevent Lead Poisoning in Rochester. Elizabeth, thank you for being here.
Thanks, Evan.
And Gary Kirkmeyer is here, the Director of Inspection and Compliance Services for the Neighborhood and Business Development in the City of Rochester. Gary, welcome.
Thank you.
Elizabeth, you told the Democrat and Chronicle that it should not have taken Flint for communities like Rochester around the country to sort of reignite the public awareness about lead, but it did. Tell me more about that. How do you feel in looking at what's going on in Flint?
Well, it's an absolutely heartbreaking situation. I mean, the people who have been working in this community to address lead poisoning prevention know all too well the difficulties that those families are going through. And so to actually see that manifest in an entire city in a very public way, betrayed by the public trust they had in their elected officials to take care of them, to make sure that their utilities were safe, is just absolutely heartbreaking.
We had an urban planner on this program last month, does a lot of work in Rochester. And he said that community design can't just favor those with means, that we have to care about everyone in our community. And he said, what's happening in Flint is predictable if we don't care about people in poverty. Do you agree with that?
Yes. You know, and the truth is, you know, the problem with Flint is that it actually made the lead situation visible. You know, there was a smell to it. There was a look to it. There was something that was actually, it was manifested, whereas here it's been, the problem has been that it's invisible, right? It's dust. It's this thing that we got out of gas and we got out of car in paint in 1978. And so it seems like it should be gone by now, but yet it's still around us all the time.
Sure. And so that law passed in 1978 in the city of Rochester. Well, Gary, what happened in 2005? Tell us what happened in Rochester.
In 2005, the city adopted an ordinance that requires inspections to include visual observations for deteriorated paint and, beyond that, proactive lead dust wipe test in the absence of having a deteriorated paint issue.
What is a lead dust wipe test?
So the ordinance says that, you know, it's based on a presumption. The presumption is that if the structure was built before 1978, that the painted covered surfaces could contain lead. And so in the absence of having visual detection of deteriorated paint, we're going to proactively wipe test or do a scientific test in that area to make sure there's no unseen hazard.
All right. How often have we been doing that in the last decade plus?
Well, we've done close to 32,000 units in terms of the visual inspection. Actually, we've done 129,000 units. We've done wipe tests in 32,000.
All right, wipe tests, so more than 30,000 over the last decade, and how often are we finding elevated levels?
We've failed over 3,000 units for dust hazards. We've failed over 6,000 units for visual inspection.
All right, so that's... You know, I'm trying to do a little math here. I mean, that's maybe a little less than 10%. That's a lot of homes, though. I mean, this is still I mean, I don't. Is it a crisis? How do you describe it, Elizabeth?
Well, you have to look at the age of the housing, yeah, right? Yeah. And the presumption is that, and it, you know, the other side of this is that also we're being proactive about all of this, right? We are actually going and looking for hazards. We are actually encouraging children to get tested and to make sure families get their kids tested. So we find more because we're looking for it more, which is something that other communities aren't as active as we are. So, and also, you know, to the passing rate, I mean, you know, it's the law now that the homes have to be safe, right? You're not allowed to rent a home that has a neurotoxin in it, which is what lead paint is, and that's the law. And so landlords have stepped up. They've actually done the work that needs to be done, and we're finding that that the homes are safer.
Agree with that, Gary?
Yeah, I agree with that. You know, when the lead ordinance came into play, it changed not only the way that properties are inspected, but the way that they're maintained. And, the business model of the investor had to change. For them to stay in compliance with the ordinance, they had to do beyond what was visually apparent when you walk into a unit. You have to look behind the backs of the sashes. You had to look at the areas that were undetected before. And so the landlords have stepped up to a great extent. But the problem is, these are, you know, interim controls only last on average 2 to 3 years. So it requires continuous efforts, not only on the maintenance side, but on the observation and the inspection side.
And I also want to clarify something, that when we're also talking about where there's a lead hazard, it can be in a beautifully maintained home. It's not, you know, that there's chipping, peeling paint. It's not like you walk in and automatically you go, oh, my God, this place is a nightmare. You know, it's the lead paint, it's friction surfaces, right? So it's opening and closing doors, it's walking across painted surfaces, it's opening and closing windows. So even if there's no chipping paint whatsoever, if you can see 5 or 6 layers of paint on your old original wooden sashes for your windows, chances are that original layer of paint is lead, and that's what's creating dust, and that's what's creating the lead hazard.
Okay, so listeners, if you've got questions about lead in your home, in our community, the process, how to find it, etc., this is a great opportunity with the resources we have this hour for you to jump in with phone calls, questions, comments. It's 844-295-TALK, toll-free, 844-295-8255, or if you're in the city of Rochester, 263-WXXI, 263-9994. Producer Megan Mack and I are on Twitter. You can find us there, at Evan Dawson or at MMacMedia. You can email the program as well. I already have a couple of emails. I'll get to those coming up in a moment here. Let me turn to Dr. Stan Schaefer. First of all, just looking at Flint, I've heard a lot of people say appalled. What's the first word that comes to mind to you looking at Flint?
Just horrible. I mean, the whole situation there is horrible. The exposure that has gone on now for well over a year for the families there, and particularly the children, because, you know, young children's brain development is crucial, particularly in the ages up to age 3. And if these children are exposed to it in whatever form, whether it's in the water, in dust, paint, that can have devastating effects for the rest of their lives in terms of learning, in terms of IQ, in terms of behavior, ADHD symptoms. And then even, you know, later on in life, problems with high blood pressure, osteoporosis, and also even
kidney damage.
Kidney damage and a whole host of other things. So, you know, lead is not a normal constituent of the human body. We don't have lead in our bodies normally. It's only because of exposure from the environment that we get lead.
And I already have an email from a listener named Joe who said, Evan, you're talking about kids in Flint and Rochester, and you should be, but my wife and I are child-free. We're looking at buying a home. And is there a concern, or what is the concern, he says, for adults and lead exposure? Because we talk about before age 3, understandably so, developing brain, et cetera. How would you answer Joe's question?
Well, there's less of a risk for adults in terms of brain development, of course, but it can still affect other functions of the human body. And you know, I recall many years back, my wife had a friend in North Carolina whose husband was remodeling their home because they were expecting their first child. And he started having severe headaches. And it was only after he had several visits to his doctor that somebody checked a lead test, and it came back quite high. So you can have headaches and ongoing other problems, even as adults who are exposed to lead.
And particularly women who are expecting or maybe planning on becoming pregnant. One of the things that we see a lot with women is nesting. So actually the way lead is a neurotoxin, and and we ingest it, and it moves through our bodies and eventually settles in our bones. The big concern is that in the third trimester of pregnancy, babies are looking for calcium. They get it from their mom, and in the absence of calcium, they can actually absorb lead from the mom. So in extreme cases, a woman can lead poison her baby in utero. So you want to make sure that if you're planning on becoming pregnant, if you're going to be looking at renovating your home, you follow lead safe work practices. And lead's a neurotoxin, so it impacts anything with the nervous system, and that also includes your pets.
All right, I've got plenty of questions as we go forward, but I want to make sure the community is just part of the discussion from the jump this hour. So this is a different Joe on the phone. Joe in Rochester. Go ahead, Joe.
Hi, good afternoon. I am a landlord. I own many properties in the Park Ave area, all of which are circa 1920s. And I'm very familiar with the lead paint ordinance, and I think it's had a very positive impact. My question is, there's also a housekeeping component involved in this. You know, these buildings pre-78 are going to have lead. There's impossible to get rid of it on the under layers of the paint. And the one of your guests or contributors talked about ingesting the paint. Well, if I beg to differ, I think housekeeping is a factor, not the only factor, not a major factor. So I'd like to hear her response to that.
Joe, thank you. Go ahead, Elizabeth.
Thanks, Joe, for your question. It's great to hear from you. I will tell you right now that the Coalition to Prevent Lead Poisoning is an education and advocacy organization. And honestly, if it were as simple as cleaning, we would totally be handing out buckets and mops and so forth to every single person in this community. Certainly, making sure that people clean wet and not use vacuum cleaners to move dust around is important, but also making sure there's no lead hazard there in the first place is equally important.
Joe, you want to follow up there?
Yes. Okay. So what I'm hearing is that housekeeping is or is not a factor.
I think housekeeping is a factor. It certainly, because dust is the major source of lead today in our community. And so definitely housekeeping is a factor, but you have to have the lead there,
right,
either being trekked in from the outside or within the property itself to begin with, to have that dust.
You know, and also you're talking, I mean, if you've got an old window and you're opening and closing the window, all of our houses are old wooden houses with dust in them. I don't care how great a housekeeper you are, you're still going to have dust in your house. If your window has lead paint in it and you're opening and closing it all the time, it's going to create, it's microscopic what we're talking about. We're not talking about something you can actually see and clean up, unfortunately. I mean, it'd be simpler if it was bigger.
Okay, so it still comes down to somebody, that there's going to be, if you open and close your windows on these older sashes, there's going to be dust. And the dust, the landlord can't be in every day. So again, as you say, it's the education of the resident to clean properly to prevent the ingestion of lead
and
or
replace
lead particles.
And or replace the windows so there's not a hazard to worry about.
Right. And Joe, Gary Kirkmeyer, hi, Joe. You know, it starts with paint stabilization. We have passed a very high rate of dust wipe test, and I don't think that's shocking or surprising to the extent that those units have already passed the visual inspection. So there's already been a clearance of unstable paint, if you will. So, you know, it's hard to argue with the numbers. When the units don't have deteriorated paint, on a very large percent of those cases, they're passing the dust wipe test. So I think it starts with remedying deteriorated paint. And yeah, cleanliness could help out additionally, but it starts with the paint.
But as Elizabeth said, replacing old windows or getting liners for the windows can make a big difference.
And that's what we're seeing. We're seeing landlords, you know, there's been quite a lot of grant money between the city and county given out for window replacement, porch replacement, and owners are taking that action. You know, they're replacing a lot of windows, a lot more than they used to.
I mean, we want to say we actually have, you know, a great number of landlords who are really doing the right thing, who see the benefit of all of this. We also have a lot of resources in this community to the grants you're talking about. We also have free classes. You know, one of the things that happened in 2010 is that the EPA passed what's called the Renovation, Repair, and Painting Rule. It's a federal law. It requires that anybody disturbing 6 square feet on an interior or 20 square feet on an exterior has got to be certified in lead safe work practices. So we actually have free classes so that people can get, and I say we, I pretend like I run the class. It's actually Monroe County Department of Public Health. They run these classes. So there's lots of resources, lots of ways for people to get educated and informed to be able to do the right thing.
All right, listeners, we've got a lot of questions coming in here. And I think our audience knows that when appropriate, I think we can be tough and firm with elected leaders and representatives of government. And then when appropriate, I think we need to at least acknowledge when this is not a Flint situation here. Unfortunately, in Flint, from all the appearances, there was plenty of evidence early on that the decisions were potentially disastrous, and they were ignored until it was a crisis. In Rochester, Gary's here. The city's represented here. And Elizabeth, to me, it looks like we're not a Flint in that way, that we are being proactive as much as we can.
No, we are incredibly fortunate to have partners, community partners, government agencies that have been working together. Because of people like Stan Schaefer, because of the founders of the Coalition to Prevent Lead Poisoning, they actually made this a public issue well over a decade ago. We had a lead summit in 2004 where, at that point, County Executive Maggie Brooks and Mayor Bill Johnson got together and publicly said they were going to do it. Gary, would it be fair to say that our county friends and city friends had to be dragged to the table originally to have these conversations with their community partners? But now, over the years, we've developed these trusted relationships and understanding that it really does take all the different components, part of the community, to come together and work collaboratively.
At least walk to the table. It was, there was a lot of unknowns back then. You know, there wasn't really any inspection model out there that was a proactive model. Until we began in 2006.
We are unique. I'm sorry to interrupt. We are unique in the country.
Yeah, there's a lot of reactive activity going on with various health departments. But, one of the things that led us to be able to be successful early on is we had this solid foundation of proactive inspections with our rental properties. We already had that foundation. So we really just had to tailor it to this need and focus on deteriorated paint and add the dust wipe test. That's basically what we had to do.
And actually the efforts here in Monroe County started even before that. So way back in 1997, Dr. Andy Doniger, who was the director of the County Health Department, got HUD grants for lead hazard control efforts. So we're talking nearly 20 years ago. And that was really an outstanding effort that really got the ball rolling. And our rates of children with new diagnosis of elevated lead levels went down very quickly after that.
Doctor, where are we now compared to where we were?
Okay, so if we look at 2014, there were 139 children in Monroe County with blood lead levels of 10 or higher detected for the first time that year. Compare that to 2002, 12 years earlier, where there were 1,234, so nearly a 90% decrease over a period of just over a decade. So, and this has really been the result of a very collaborative effort between the city, the county, community groups, the Lead Coalition,
the University of Rochester, University, Empire Justice,
right,
all of these different.
The health insurers are part of this. We've all been working together for maybe 15 years or so on this issue, and we meet regularly. So it's an issue that is ongoing. We've made tremendous progress, and Rochester has actually become the model for other communities throughout the nation. We've heard, Buffalo, Cleveland, other communities are trying to emulate what Rochester is doing in many ways.
I just want to say also, I don't want to make it sound like we've all been singing songs together for the past 10 years. There's been lots of discussions and turmoil and holding people accountable and having very, very difficult conversations at times and questioning policies and making people revise policies and looking at best practices, looking at data and making sure that we are always looking at what is going to impact children, what's going to work efficiently and be effective in terms of addressing this.
Well, Stephen on Twitter is sharing a sentiment that I'm hearing from a number of people already this hour. Stephen writes, okay, I'm scared. Maybe you can ask how to get a test on my home. Is there a permanent solution? What does it look like? What does it cost? So let's go back over this process here, because on a similar line in terms of what we can do, Joel just writes to us and says it helps to have proactive owners who repaint regularly and after tenants vacate. So some of it's maintenance, it sounds like, but let's just start. Let me go back to Gary and let's just kind of go through the process here. Steven's concerned about his home, mm-hmm. wants to know, how do I start just finding out if I've got a lead issue at home right now?
Well, if he lives in the city of Rochester, he can call our office and we'll come out and do a free lead inspection for him, both the visual inspection and, if it passes visual, the dust wipe test.
And you can give the number, the office to call, Gary?
Yeah, it's 428-6520.
6520, 428-6520 to call. So free lead test there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And Elizabeth?
And that's actually part of our ordinance, and that's one of the things that's so great about our law is that our citizens are entitled to live in, let's say, housing. If you don't live in the city of Rochester, there are lots of certified inspectors that are available, and you can do for under $200. They will come out to your home with an XRF gun. It's a piece of equipment that costs upwards of $20,000. It's a big deal. They will measure every painted surface in your home. It measures up through 60 layers of paint, is it, Gary? And they'll give you a blueprint of where there's a lead hazard or where there's not. We suggest you do that. You get an inspection, you find out, because not knowing doesn't make the problem go away. And there are things you can do. You might assume that your house is filled with lead paint. It might not be. There may be one room that's really hot, so, you know, rather than addressing that, you say, you know what, let's not make that the kids' room. I mean, there's lots of different things you can do once you have information, and you can do it incrementally. It doesn't have to be all of a sudden you have to spend all this money to get all of your home remediated. There's lots of different steps you can do.
Okay, but I'm also, in a second, I want to broaden this a little. I'm thinking about, you know, friends of ours, listeners in Geneva, in Penyan, in outlying areas who may not have an ordinance that said you've got a right to get a free test, et cetera. Get to that in a second, but let's stay in Rochester for a second. Gary, you do an inspection, you find elevated levels, et cetera. Steven says he's a little nervous. Some homeowners might, I think, legitimately ask, are we out? Do we vacate until it's fixed? I mean, what do we do? What do we do then?
Well, if it's a single-family owner-occupant situation, they are exempt from the violation sections of the lead ordinance. So it would be more of an advisement.
I'm just thinking, what should they do to be safe?
Well,
do they need to get up and get out of there for a while before it gets cleaned out? No.
I mean, it would depend on how severe it is. We would give them some direction and guidance in terms of, just like Elizabeth said, if it was a kid's room and it had severe deteriorated paint, we would suggest removing the kid from that room. I mean, there's certain things they could do right away, we would suggest, and certain things that they can take their time doing given the seasons that we have.
Okay. You want to make, I mean, there's simple things like taking your shoes off when you come in the house, making sure that you wash your hands with soap and water, not hand sanitizer, because dust is in, dust is dirt, it is not germs. Things like making sure you follow New York State law, which requires that all children get tested for lead at ages 1 and again at 2. And that's regardless of where you live. That person living in Geneva can make sure their child gets tested. You can actually, I'm not sure of all of the counties, and Stan, maybe you can speak to that, but you can get your child tested for exposure to lead up until age 18 here in Monroe County. I'm not sure of all of the other counties. But you can also hire somebody to come in and inspect your home. I mean, these guys will travel. Knowing it really gives you some power. I know it's a frightening thing. We're not dismissing that. We understand that. I got scared the first time I took a lead safe work practices class. I couldn't believe it. But not knowing doesn't make the problem go away, and there's lots of people around this table and in this community who have resources and information to share.
Well, let me turn to Dr. Schaefer then. Again, he is an associate professor in the URMC Department of Pediatrics and the Center for Community Health and the director of the Western New York Lead Poisoning Resource Center's Rochester office. But if I'm living in Penyan and I'm in an old house and I don't know about the paint and I don't I'm just picking Penyan and Geneva as just sort of examples. I don't know community to community. And maybe folks can let me know if there's direct resources and help. But what should I do?
Well, the resources vary from community to community. What I would suggest that someone, for instance, living in Penyan or Geneva do is contact their county health department or the locality. Find out if the town that they live in has any services to do inspections. In terms of the health departments, many of them can go in and assist homeowners. They can, you know, help with visual inspections. They may not have the means to do dust wipe testing and other things that the city of Rochester does. But each of the county health departments has a role, and they can be helpful as well.
All right, Elizabeth.
I'm sorry, there are a couple of resources. So there's a federal law that's the EPA law. So that requires that anybody who does work, regardless of where they live in the United States of America, has got to follow lead safe work practices in doing any type of work. And there's also New York State law that you make sure you get your kids tested. And you can also hire somebody to come in and, you know, measure to see what's going on. But the thing is, the bottom line is, if you live in a house built before 1978, presume there's lead paint in there and act accordingly.
Right. We're not saying get rid of all the lead paint in your home. If the home is in good condition, if the paint is not disturbed, if there's no chipping or flaking of the paint, and opening and closing the windows or the doors does not cause paint to become dust that can blow around the home, then it's probably safe. You know, it would be a massive undertaking to get rid of all the lead paint in all the homes in any community. So we have to do what's really best in terms of using resources and the focus on the properties that have the problem.
All right, Patrick in Rochester has a question for our panel. Go ahead, Patrick.
Yes, a lot of times you'll see a sandblasting or acid washing of paint on the exteriors of buildings, some small, some very large. Is there any regulation about that? Or, you know, the stuff comes off and fogs of lead paint. What about that?
Yeah,
that's against the law here.
Yeah, there's two laws that would apply. They have to use lead safe work practices, obviously, and then the RRP rule would apply depending on how much paint they're stabilizing. If you see anything like that in the city of Rochester, you can certainly call that same number, 428-6520, and we will investigate that.
That's actually considered a public health hazard, and that is against the law within the city of Rochester. And there are people like me who drive around and actually know what is within the law, and I will report you.
not that too.
No, no. I mean, I will, like, if you're my poor neighbor who lives down the street and had some guy doing work on her house on the weekend, I will photograph your license plate and send it to the EPA.
Thank you much.
Thank you very much, Patrick.
I'm there to make sure you guys are staying safe.
Quick question from Tori, and I think this is an important one as well. Tori emails and just wants to know, she said, we've been talking about paint and dust in Rochester. Are we certain that there is not any water issue? Maybe not to the Flint level, she's asking, but are we certain that Rochester and Western New York do not have a lead in the water issue that would be at all similar?
That's a complicated question. Now, the water that we drink here in this community that comes from Hemlock Lake and Cannadice Lake through the city of Rochester water system, or from Lake Ontario through the county water system, is not particularly corrosive, unlike the situation in Flint. And so it doesn't cause lead to leach out of the pipes or out of the lead solder that connects the pipes. However, the service lines running from the reservoirs to the streets, to the homes, are often very old, in some cases 100, 120, 140 years old. And certainly they do contain, lead pipes. And so the problem is not, again, corrosion. And so the water here is tested regularly, and more than 90%+ of the cases meet the federal guidelines, which is, 15 parts per billion. But still, one has to be concerned. So just as if you go on vacation, when you come back and you turn on your water, it's going to come out a little bit brown. Same thing, if water's been sitting in the pipes for hours on end or days on end, you shouldn't, fill it up immediately and start drinking it. You should let it run for a minute or two. And particularly, for cooking purposes, use cold water instead of warm water, because warm water is more likely to have lead in it. We don't know how much of an extent the problem is with lead pipes in individual homes, because once it comes from, the supply pipe into the home, many of the homes in
Rochester.
That's
the homeowner's responsibility.
It is the homeowner's responsibility, and many of the homes have lead pipes, particularly if they are older properties. So let your water run, for a minute or two before you use it.
And if you feel like you want to get a water filter, make sure it has an NSF rating for lead. Not every filter that you buy off the shelf is going to be one that's rated for lead. And you want to make sure, by the way, that you are maintaining it and changing your filter. I mean, I want to ask the question, are you changing your furnace filters? Are you making sure all the batteries in your smoke detectors work? Then you need to apply that same consistency of maintenance to the water filter that you've got on your faucet mount filter.
We're talking about lead in Rochester. And yes, the Flint crisis has prompted this discussion, but as Elizabeth McDade has been telling us, as the program director for the Coalition to Prevent Lead Poisoning in Rochester, this is not a reawakening for the people like her who've been working on this for many years. And while we've gotten much better, it's far from being sort of a done deal, and that's what we're talking about.
And I would hazard a guess that given the age of the housing in Michigan, those children probably already had lead poisoning to begin with, and that the situation with the water in Flint just exacerbated, because every exposure to lead is cumulative and it's permanent, and the longer you're exposed and at the greater consistency, the higher your lead poisoning.
Right, and so we've talked about how I think the leadership, the political leadership, is rightly under, investigation, public analysis, and more for their behavior here. That's not what's happening in Rochester, Monroe County, and Western New York. We're talking about the efforts to remove lead. And by the way, this is not the first time in American history that government leaders have been sort of slow to react to lead. I encourage you, if you haven't checked it out, watch. I think it's the 7th episode of the recent season of Cosmos, hosted by Neil deGrasse Tyson, all about lead. When did we find out? When did we know? What did Congress do? You know, lead is, it's malleable, it's really easy to use, but...
The use of lead was outlawed in Europe in the 1920s.
Right.
And Benjamin Franklin wrote a lead safe work practice treatise.
So watch that episode, though. It's great storytelling, but it will unnerve you a little bit. But we're doing our best to kind of move forward. Let's get a short break and come back to your phone calls. Check in with a teacher at the World of Inquiry School about what they're doing out there, and get more of your questions answered about what to do about lead. Coming up in our second hour, we know that homelessness is an issue that many organizations in Rochester have been trying to address. And one of the biggest challenges is permanent housing. There's a new partnership in Rochester aiming squarely at permanent housing and long-term solutions for people in crisis. We'll tell you all about it next hour on Connections.
With recent workplace and school shootings, businesses are responding to rising concerns.
75% to 80% are looking to now do some type of armed intruder / active shooter training.
Fleeing, hiding, and fighting back. How companies hope to counter terrorists, angry employees, and other dangers. Later on All Things Considered from NPR News.
This afternoon at 4 on WXXI.
Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. I want to bring in Chris Woodmeyer on the phone. He's a teacher at World of Inquiry School in Rochester. And his students are, Chris, is it right? They're making a movie about lead paint. Is that right?
Yeah, I have a couple of students that decided that that's what they were going to do for the Fast Forward Film Festival and a project that I gave them to investigate some part of the world and how things could be more sustainable.
How did they come to know and talk about and focus on lead, Chris?
Well, earlier this year, I had some students from RIT come in that were in a GIS class where doing mapping, and they wanted to come in and do a lesson with our students, and I suggested that we do something around lead. And we made maps that showed the incidence of lead in the city of Rochester on top of areas where most of the people rented their houses and where people were living in poverty and children were living in the houses, and kind of use that to have discussions about lead and its effects on the body and general discussions about lead and the environment and how our environment affects us all.
How far along are they in the work of making this film about lead paint?
They're just getting started. Just the other day that they came to me and said, we're trying to get in touch with Mayor Warren because we want to talk to her about this. And it was interesting because it also intersected with a lesson that I started talking about the Flint water crisis, and then we started talking about Detroit Public Schools, which the teachers had, through Twitter, exposed the conditions of the schools there, and it got us talking about, are they being exposed to lead and all the different ways that our environments are affecting us, and that we don't necessarily know that until it's brought to our attention.
And Chris,
so they're in the beginning stages.
Yeah, I'm curious to know, as a teacher, how are you talking about Flint with these students, and what questions are they asking?
I use it in a way that we can make what's going on in class relevant to them and relatable. You know, we can all relate to drinking tap water, and we can also relate to the idea that that we need to know about the science and what's going on. So I bring it in as a case study that we can use to study things like social justice and environmental justice and ask that question of, are people being disproportionately affected by this, that are poor or racial minorities or you know, any sort of differentiation in the way people are affected by these kinds of things.
It'd be hard to say that's not the case, right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's, you know, the lead maps we made of the city of Rochester just pretty clearly show that there's a disproportionate number of people that are living in poverty affected by lead. You know, children tested positive for lead. And then the action piece. I actually met Elizabeth several years ago when we did a project with seventh graders, and that was one of the issues we talked about. And students made public service announcements to bring it to people's attention. And so that piece of we're not just learning about things, but doing what we can to take action on what we learn is also a key lesson here.
All right, Chris, stay there for a second. That's great to hear that these projects are happening, Elizabeth.
Yeah, Chris, I hope you'll invite me to class when they premiere the film. Maybe we can actually, it's going to be part of the which film festival?
They're hoping to get into Fast Forward, right, Chris?
So that's at the Little, or is that Greentopia?
No.
It'll be at the Little.
Great.
Yep.
I wanted to ask Chris a question, and that is, do you know if any of the children in your class have a history of lead exposure or lead poisoning?
That's a good question, and it's a really, it's an interesting thing to talk about, because a lot of them can speak to knowing family members that get lead checks, and they don't really understand what that means, but they understand it has something to do with lead exposure. So they'll talk about that, and it is an interesting thing in the variables that we think about when we think about success in school and success in life, and that narrative that poverty and success in school and all these different things are really related to decisions that people make individually. The students really start to reflect on that, and for themselves and their classmates.
Right. We've been working very closely with the Rochester City School District over the last several years because the school district really wants to find out which children entering school may have had lead poisoning because, you know, they can supervise them, watch them more carefully in terms of are they falling off in terms of their learning? Do they need special services? And the school district has worked very closely with Monroe County Health Department, with our office and others to try to get that information. We're trying to make it more available to schools.
The We're CDC actually trying to get legislation out, passed to
right,
do
the,
that.
The CDC came out with a white paper last year, 2015, recommending that schools find out which children may have had lead exposure in the past and closely monitor them for their educational attainment to make sure that they get the services they need early on.
And what's the difficulty with that in New York State, Stan?
Well, the problem is that even though the schools have access to immunization information through the New York State Immunization Registry, they do not have access to the lead data that's in that same resource.
And that's going to require a legislative move,
We're
correct?
Working on yeah. changing the New York State law in that regard.
All right, so Chris, stay on the line with us. I want to continue on the theme of working with kids who've been exposed to lead, and I want to bring in Dina in Rochester, who's been waiting to join the conversation as well. Dina, go ahead.
Hi, yes. I worked with a young man back in the 90s, a little boy about 5, who had about 3 to 4 siblings, all had lead exposure, and their behaviors, they had severe behavior problems, they had cognitive skills that were just all over the map, they were impulsive, their speech was not even, you couldn't even understand what they were saying, and my issue with this is I just find that I feel that there's a lot of landlords that are out of state and local who just don't care about the poor neighborhoods. And I have thought about this for decades, just how it affects primarily the poor neighborhoods. And the landlords that are out of state, they don't even get fined. So it's like these poor people are paying their rent, and it's really affecting their children, which affects them for life. This does not go away. I don't think people understand this. This does not go away. These kids can pick up new skills to the best of ability, but they are pretty much disabled for their life. And I would like to see some heavy fines towards the landlords out of state and in Rochester to just take better care of their homes and care about the people that live in their homes, which would also make their community a better neighborhood.
Dina, thanks for the phone call. Elizabeth McDade is the program director for the Coalition to Prevent Lead Poisoning in Rochester. Are we being tough enough on the kinds of people that she just described who are not cooperating, and has that gotten better?
Well, thank you, Dina, for your call. That was great. And you're right. Yes, these are permanent impacts that are going to affect these children for the rest of their lives. I will say that it sounds like you were working with this family before we actually had the lead ordinance in place. And so one of the things that's important to remember is that we actually do have legal compliance at this point for the most part. There's also stuff, you know, I mean, one of the things that we need to also pay attention to is making sure when you're hiring contractors, anybody to do work, that they actually are following the federal law. Those fines are excessive. If you are not in compliance with the federal law at this point, it's $37,500 a day. So you want to make sure that anybody, and that law went into effect in 2010. So you want to make sure you're aware of what resources are available, what ways making people stay in compliance are available. And I also wanted to share also, Chris, thanks for your call again, but we also have a Lead Safe Schools policy, which is one of the things that we've had in place for several years as well, and that was, again, working with our partners at the City School District.
Well, Chris Widmeyer, before I let you go, Chris is a teacher at World of Inquiry School, and if your students get the film, and it'll be at the Fast Forward Film Festival, for our audience who hasn't heard it, I think this will be the third year. These are films 5 minutes or less in length, environmentally focused films. And so that's the goal here. But what else moving forward do you and the students want to do with this? And how do you want to sort of, you know, as you said, not just talk but take action?
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that I really hope students do is go home and talk to their families about this and really, you know, make their families aware of it. And I know here at our school that we have information about lead testing available to parents. And I think for educators, it's really important to think about that piece, that this is both permanent, but there are interventions that we can do, that it's not something that offers an excuse for students. You know, that we really need to work hard in our classrooms to make sure that we're doing things that help students that may have lead poisoning. But then also I think that we need students to, you know, just be aware of these sorts of things. And by being aware, when they get to the point, you know, it's as a science teacher, it's important to me that students use what they've learned in class to make smart decisions when they get older and to be able to advocate for themselves. I think being empowered to advocate for themselves is something that I'm hoping will come out of this and recognizing what their rights are and that they have the right to live somewhere that is lead-free, and that families don't have to tolerate landlords that, you know, may not take care of the apartments in the way that they should.
Sure. Yeah, Chris, hang there for one more minute because I know Elizabeth wants to jump in, and I had one more question for you.
I just want to tie in, you know, understanding that the lead law, that our ordinance in our community allows anybody to call and request a lead inspection. If you're a tenant, you do not need to get your landlord's permission to request that free inspection. That is your right as a citizen in this community.
Even if you don't own the property?
No.
Got it.
If you're living there, you can call and let the city in, and they will do the inspection. That is your right as somebody who is living within the city of Rochester. You do not, and there's no legal recourse. It's also against the law.
And understand that all of the programs that we're facilitating from an inspection perspective are geared towards ensuring that everybody is provided safe and habitable housing. So everybody has a right to safe and habitable housing.
And, you know, I also want to, we actually have a lead poisoning prevention brochures in 7 languages, and looking at a lot of our new residents. So we have them in Burmese, Nepali, Somali, Karen, Swahili, Spanish, and English. I think I got all 7 in there. And we want to make sure that everybody knows that they have these rights, that they have these resources that are available. And, you know, there is no cure for lead poisoning. You know, there's no medical intervention and there's no educational intervention that's going to cure it. So you want to make sure you avoid it in the first place.
That is why I want to ask Chris one more question here. And David sent a series of tweets my way just a couple of minutes ago that has me thinking about that. Because we're talking about prevention. We're talking about going forward. How do you remove lead from homes? How do you make sure your home is safe? How do you prevent this high number of children from being exposed to it early on? David says, my grandfather was a typesetter at the Times Union for roughly 30 years, and I think he had chronic lead poisoning that presented itself like dementia. A colleague of his that worked next to him presented exactly the same, and they both used to melt lead in their basements to make fishing sinkers. You know, to make fishing sinkers. So
that actually makes it more effective. When you heat lead, if you vaporize it, that actually makes it worse.
Oh, boy. Well, but Chris, I'm thinking of David's comment, and David's, you know, grandfather, he thinks, had lead poisoning, and who knows how the people around him reacted to him. And I'm thinking of, well, who knows how people are reacting to children in the city of Rochester who may have these issues with lead, and we say, well, this is just another, you know, kid in trouble. This kid's not paying attention in class. This kid didn't show up. This kid is not good at math. Whatever it is. Chris, when you can learn more as a teacher, you know, are you going to sort of moderate or change at all what you're doing to reach out to students, knowing that some may have these challenges?
I think as city teachers and all of the different traumatic effects of living in concentrated poverty are things that we deal with every day. And so there's kind of a universal set of interventions that we use for things. But I think it's really important for teachers and the community to understand, from a systems perspective and be able to see farther down the line than just something like the students are getting in trouble. So really looking at the root causes. And the course I teach is actually through SUNY ESF, and a big piece of that is systems thinking, is being able to connect what's going on to lots of different things. And I think, I hope that's something that the community can think about, that there's a lot more going on than just students, don't want to learn or don't want to be successful in school. That is most likely not the case, that there are lots of things behind it, and there are lots of parents that care very much for their students. And so being empathetic, or for their children, being empathetic and thinking about the fact that it's not just parental care and it's not just innate desire, that there are other things going on that affect people is a really important thing for teachers in our community to consider.
Chris Widmeyer is a teacher at World of Inquiry School. Good luck to your students on making this film about lead paint and to the work they're doing. Thanks for taking the time to come on the program, Chris.
All right. Well, thank you very much for having me, and I really enjoyed it, and we'll go back and listen to the show and make sure we share the free lead inspection with everybody. I think that is a definite action that can come out of this today is making sure everybody knows about that and gets their family to take part in that if they rent their house.
No question.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Chris. Chris Widmeyer joining us. And Gary, say it again. You do not even have to own your home. If you're a tenant in Rochester, you have a right.
Yeah, we respond to tenant complaints on a continuous basis. So, there's certain regularly scheduled inspections when a property CFO expires, but beyond that timetable, anyone that has any issues that they want addressed or assessed has a right to call for an inspection.
And I want to also point out that both the city and Monroe County have grants to assist property owners, whether it's owner-occupied housing or rental housing, to take care of these hazards properly, to improve the housing. And, these grants are available. There are many of them through the city and the county. And people do take advantage of them.
And I also want to share that our colleagues and our good friends over at the Monroe County Department of Public Health are fantastic. They do what's called environmental investigations if children are reported with elevated blood lead levels. So the standard level for intervention at this point is 10 micrograms per deciliter, but in our county, they do interventions regularly at 8, and a family member can call, a parent or caregiver can call if a child has a blood lead level of 5 or above. So we have lots of resources and lots of people who want to address this.
Okay. Sam in Rochester has a question for the panel. Go ahead, Sam.
Yes. I would like to know, back in the 90s, they got money into this city twice to take care of the lead problem. But instead of taking care of the lead problem, it seemed like the lead got worse and the money disappeared. So how is it that we still have the lead problem and with all the money that was sent in to take care of the lead problem?
Sam, thanks for the phone call. I don't know specifically the grants he's talking about. I don't know that our panel does either. Do you?
No, I'm not aware. I do know that we've been getting lead grants for some time now, and all of those lead grants have been used to remediate lead problems.
I mean, Sam, you can see the evidence by the number of kids that we find reported with lead paint poisoning. I mean, that's a huge indicator of the fact that money is being spent to actually educate the community, to actually make sure that homes are safe. So I'm not quite sure what grants you're talking about,
yeah.
But...
Right.
We're doing some great work here.
I mean, the incidence rate of newly diagnosed children with lead poisoning in our community in Monroe County has gone down at over twice the rate of New York State as a whole. So it's really gone down much faster in our community than the rest of the state. And I think this is because of these combined efforts by government, by other organizations, by everyone working together, and these grants that are providing resources to property owners to help remediate problems in both in owner-occupied and rental housing.
So In other words here, we're down more than 90% in less than 15 years in Monroe County, but that doesn't mean that people like Elizabeth Stan. Well, I mean, we're not satisfied. We have a problem.
But also,
still.
I mean, you know, Stan's got some data in front of him that, you know, so we've been measuring 10 micrograms per deciliter for, you know, at this point. We've seen this huge reduction of 10. Well, at the county, at our request, they actually started keeping track of 5 and above, which is what the Centers for Disease Control now calls a level of intervention. If you look at that level, we are back at combined with 5. If we look at the 5 and above combined with the 10 and above from 2014, which is when we had the last data, we are back at the levels of a decade ago. So, you know, we keep learning more as we go along. And, you know, people keep saying, I grew up in an old house, I'm fine. My question back to you is maybe you're not. You know, maybe, I'm not saying that to scare people, but to understand that, you know, we do things differently as we get smarter, as we learn more as we go along. My mom smoked when she was pregnant with me. We don't do that anymore, right? I mean, we hope we learn as we go along and we change our practices and best behaviors.
And so what are we going to do going forward to continue to make the progress you want to see?
So the things that people need to understand is they need to get their children tested in accordance with New York State law. Monroe County is doing an incredible job of doing that, but we are not at 100% compliance. We do about 60% of the one-year-olds and about 25% of the two-year-olds, and the importance of doing between one and two is because at age two, that's when a child is exploring its world and everything goes in its mouth. So you want to make sure that all children get tested. You want to make sure that you get your home inspected if you think it's an issue. And if you're going to be doing any renovation work in a pre-78 structure, you need to make sure you're using RRP-certified contractors.
Thank you for being here, Elizabeth. And thanks for all the great information out there. We appreciate that. Gary Kirkmeyer, Director of Inspection and Compliance Services with the City of Rochester, reminding all of us that we've got it right and that the city is there. And the phone number to call if you want an inspection
is 428-6520.
Thanks for being here.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Also, great thanks to Dr. Stan Schaefer as well for being here and sharing your expertise and on the progress, but also the progress still to be made. Thank you, Stan.
Great. Thank you very much.
All right, short break and much more connections straight ahead.